Welcome back, everyone. This is Sam.
And this is Corrine, and we are two OncDocs. Today's episode, we're focusing on renal cell carcinoma, and we'll discuss risk factors, diagnostic workup, staging, and treatment. And we are so excited to have Dr. Tom Powles and Dr. Brian Rinney from the Urologic Oncology podcast, Euromigos, and international experts in this area, talk to us about pearls related to this disease. We did some really great updates on bladder cancer a few months ago and are back here to cover kidney cancer. And just briefly, Dr. Brian Rinney is the Chief of Clinical Trials and Professor of Medicine at Vanderbilt Cancer Center, where he has pioneered multiple phase 3 trials that have led to FDA approvals in GU cancers, most notably in kidney cancer. And Dr. Tom Powles is a Professor of Oncology at Queen Mary University, the Director of Barts Cancer Center in London, Editor-in-Chief of Annals of Oncology, and also a world leader in GU oncology research, PI, and many phase 3 trials. And they will both be presenting exciting data at this upcoming ASCO, so stay tuned for their oral presentations. Anything else to add? And welcome, Brian and Tom.
It's Brian, great to be here.
Brian's a faster swimmer than me.
By some distance. It's great to be here. I want to say your intro is much better than ours. That's sort of choreographed and it's kind of fun.
This whole show just sounds generally more professional, actually, Brian. The whole package sounds better.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. We'll get some tips offline, but thanks for having us. Fun to be here. We're looking forward to it.
Perfect. So let's just dive right in. And what are some risk factors and genetic conditions associated with RCC?
I can start. Maybe, Tom, we can just bounce back and forth with questions. So there's not a lot of identified risk factors for kidney cancer. Smoking is probably the biggest risk factor, but the relative risk is only about 1.5 to 2-fold, as opposed to lung cancer where it's 10-fold or something. There's some chemical exposures which have been associated with, but always hard to prove in terms of an actual risk factor. Age is an obvious risk factor. And then, you know, hypertension and obesity have always been sort of linked together as risk factors, although there's this obesity paradox where obese patients actually do better with advanced disease. So those are some of the risk factors. And I guess the other thing, I think we might cover this later, is the genetic inherited syndromes. But most patients don't have inherited kidney cancer, nor do they have an identified risk factor.
Great. So you hit right on it. What about those genetic conditions? I know there's a little bit of a laundry list of these. Can you tell us the ones that you think of right off the bat, the ones that are testable, and then also who should be referred for genetic testing when they have RCC as a diagnosis?
So the most prominent, most common von Hippel-Lindau syndrome, which is this inherited autosomal dominant syndrome of basically vascular tumors, clear cell kidney cancer being chief among them. It's important because the biology of VHL syndrome is the same as in clear cell kidney cancer, VHL inactivation, HIF accumulation, and VEGF production in a nutshell. But those patients get spinal and cerebellar hemangioblastomas, et cetera. Belzutifan, a HIF inhibitor, I don't know if we'll talk about it, has revolutionized the treatment of that disease. So that's an important one to know about. I think if there's one to know about, that's it. And there's a laundry list of others that lead to other histologic subtypes of kidney cancer. So hereditary papillary, Bertog-Dubé syndrome, et cetera, et cetera. These are all relatively rare. Again, I'm not sure of the percentage, but boy, it's less than 10%. It might even be less than 5% of all kidney cancer is inherited. I think the current guidelines are that anybody who's 46 or younger, if I have the age right, should get genetic testing. This is a JCO paper, Brian Chuck and colleagues from a few years ago. And that certainly could be something on the boards, you know, a young patient. I think probably if I saw somebody in their late 40s or early 50s, I'd think about it as well. Or of course, anybody with family history, multiple bilateral tumors would be relatively common. I would send all those patients for genetic testing.
Definitely. Very important to remember, anyone under the age of 46 or with bilateral or multifocal tumors should be referred to a genetic counselor. They can definitely test you on that. And so next, can you tell us how does RCC usually present?
Okay, well, people in the past always talked about triad of, let me see if I can get this right, it was flank pain, hematuria, and weight loss. And that's not really the reality anymore. That's obviously an indicator of advanced disease. The majority of patients who present with renal cancer, I think hematuria is still up there as a presenting sort of symptom. But the majority of patients, I think, who are being identified with early renal cancer, many of these are being identified on CT scans, and some of these are CT scans being performed for different reasons, particularly local type disease. The percent of patients who are presenting with advanced disease is reducing, and more patients are being seen. So the incidence is actually going up, I think that's a factor of two issues. The incidence may be actually truly increasing, but it's also true that as from a global perspective, we're doing more and more CT scans. I think we're finding more and more renal masses. And one of the key questions, and there is an issue around prostate cancer and renal cancer having some parallels, is what do you do with these really early renal masses? And we often have at our meetings, they all tend to kick off with, you know, early or the small renal mass. And what's the treatment of a small renal mass? Because there are many patients in whom a small renal mass you can probably observe. So the presentation of the disease has changed a little bit, much less emphasis on symptoms of advanced disease, much more likely to have an early renal mass identified on a CT scan or a bit of hematuria.
Agree. I think the only RCCs I've seen have mostly been caught incidentally of scans for other reasons. So I agree with that one. If someone gets a biopsy, this is just a testable pearl for you guys out there. If they give you, you know, unknown primary or they want you to have the IHCs, RCC is PAX2 positive, PAX8 positive, CK7 and CK20 negative. And so next question, without going into full details, but what is kind of the quick and dirty or the basics of RCC staging, that TNM?
I think there's a lot of brain power to be spent in memorizing staging. And I think it's probably more important in some diseases than others. Kidney cancer is fairly simple, right? I mean, it's obviously size by T stage. We don't see a lot of nodal disease in kidney cancer. There's no formal node dissection when patients get a nephrectomy. Sometimes there's some nodes in the specimen, sometimes not, but it's rare to have sort of grossly positive nodes or pathologically involved nodes. And then obviously, you know, distant metastases, which we can talk about. So I could probably rattle off different size thresholds, but to me, the space required in my brain to do that, I think that's something you could look up. I would spend it more on, you know, management strategies and knowing the data.
Agreed.
From a histopath perspective, I think there are two things from an adjuvant therapy, because of the positive adjuvant Pembro trial. There is a T3 and T4 kind of, there's T2 high grade as well, but T3 and T4 tend to be the sort of adjuvant patients. And the T staging, you know, T2 is based around 7 centimeters. I don't think these sizes are particularly helpful, but T3A, which is one of the kind of early indicators, is associated with, it's grown into the nearby tissues or the renal vein. I think that's probably important, and those patients end up getting adjuvant therapy.
And the lymph node also qualifies adjuvant therapy, right? So that's kind of the stage threes.
Correct.
Yeah, lymph nodes. Pretty uncommon. We're not doing as many lymph node dissections as we used to, and I'm not super keen on that.
So I think RCC staging, like we mentioned, is pretty simple compared to other tumor types. So it's kind of localized. And so versus metastatic when you think about it, and then who qualifies for adjuvant therapy. And so in general, how do you approach localized RCC in terms of treatment options?
Localized. I mean, really, aside from what Tom mentioned, the small renal mass, which is sometimes observed, and we can talk about that if you want. You know, localized renal cancers has historically and still currently treated with either partial or radical nephrectomy. And that includes patients with nodes, patients with 16-centimeter tumors, patients with tumor thrombi up to their atrium. So surgery up until relatively recently was the only curative modality. And so, you know, aggressive surgery, even in locally advanced diseases, was generally indicated, and I think is still generally indicated. In smaller renal masses, there's, you know, data around ablation, cryoablation, RFA. There's emerging data about, you know, doing radiation to primary tumors, some data sets that have come out recently. So the smaller the tumor, the more options there are, including observation. I think the larger the tumor, those ablative and radiation options go away, and nephrectomy is the standard of care.
Brian, do you reckon it's reasonable to say partial nephrectomy for small renal masses or to a certain point, and then radical nephrectomy for those you can't do a partial on? And all of the other interventions at the moment, you know, are used, but the data supporting them is not as great as it could be. There isn't randomized data, by the way, for partial versus, or there's not very positive randomized data for partial versus a complete nephrectomy. But, you know, so even that had a bit of controversy associated with it. Although I think most people believe that nephron sparing surgery is better than not nephron sparing surgery if you can do it.
One other question that I know this is testable. Adjuvant trials after nephrectomy.
Oh, now you're going to start. Now you're starting us.
All right, let's go. Now we're going.
Let's go. I'm up for it.
Let's get heated.
I'm up for it. Okay. Number one, it works with pembrolizumab. So you've got progression-free survival advantage, or sorry, event-free survival advantage, relapse-free survival advantage, with about a 30% reduction in the risk of relapse. And that's five-year data, so five-year median survival. You've got a similar OS benefit. So it's about a 30% reduction in the risk of relapse. That OS benefit translates somewhere between a 5 and 10% overall survival benefit at that five-year time point, because not all patients are at risk. Some patients are cured by surgery. So that causes the discrepancy between those two numbers, which is important. You've got about a 10% chance of life-changing toxicity associated with the year of adjuvant pembrolizumab. This is a high-risk population, as I mentioned before, and that's why that T stage, the histological T stage, is important. There's been no positive neoadjuvant trials, and there was, in fact, one neoadjuvant trial that was negative in nivolumab. And then, Brian, why don't you talk about some of the caveats of what I've said, because I've said quite a lot of positive stuff.
So Tom left me to talk about the negative trials.
Yes, I make no apology for that.
There were three other trials that tested.
You've got to get in quickly.
Immune therapy that were negative, without sort of diving down into the details. One of them, probably the most troubling, was with ipi-nivo, which is an established regimen in the advanced setting, was negative. And there are various reasons, and we've done, you know, more than a few podcasts on this topic, including relatively recently when the Pembro survival data came out, to dig into that. But I think, as Tom said,
if you're having trouble sleeping at night, then you should be listening to our podcast. Almost everyone who listens to our ipi-nivo adjuvant podcast goes to sleep apparently within the first 7 minutes. It's an absolute cure for insomnia, that podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So where were we? So yeah, so as Tom said, adjuvant pembrolizumab for a year in T2 high grade and greater risk is the standard of care. An absolute reduction at 4 years of 8% in disease recurrence, 5% greater overall survival. Those are the absolute numbers. Obviously, there's different relative risk numbers. Balanced by toxicity and balanced by, we have no great tools to know who's going to recur. We're still using nomograms from 20 to 30 years ago. So our ability to prognosticate and, you know, treat patients who actually need it is exceedingly poor. ctDNA is not developed in RCC as it is in other diseases.
Yet.
Including bladder,
yet.
Yes. Yeah, but at present.
Yeah.
Nor do we have prognostic tools based on tissue or blood or whatever to be able to understand who's going to benefit. Anyway,
there was some nice data at AACR with Kim Won, wasn't there, Brian? Did you see that?
I did, yeah. Probably not relevant to this audience, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of experimentation and investigation into tools. But the state of the art right now is you take a patient who's at high risk based on T stage and grade. You calculate their risk of recurrence. I have a discussion with the patient. I say, hey, you're at 50% risk of recurrence. You know, we can lower that by a certain percentage, go over the numbers, balanced against toxicity and other negative trials, and have a discussion. I think most people, you know, there's general consensus that adjuvant pembrolizumab in patients who were eligible for that KEYNOTE trial is absolutely reasonable. It should be discussed with everyone. I tend to give it, especially to the higher end of that risk. I don't think it's mandatory to give to everybody who was included in the trial, because still many of those patients won't have cancer and you can only hurt those folks. But there's you can imagine there's a wide range of opinions around this.
We need to discuss it with everyone. Brian, sunitinib, is that FDA approved? It's not EMA approved. I would never give it. What's the adjuvant VEGF TKI story?
Sunitinib, a small molecule VEGF receptor inhibitor, has one positive trial amongst a sea of six or eight other negative trials of similar drugs or that drug.
And sunitinib was negative.
Disease-free, but not overall survival advantage. It's very toxic. It is in the NCCN guidelines and FDA approved. Even with all the patients I've seen before Pembro, I probably gave it to two or three patients with, you know, young, very high-risk disease. I don't think anybody's using it now that we have adjuvant Pembro.
Agreed. So I think to summarize, no true role for neoadjuvant in RCC. I heard that. Technically, sunitinib, like you just hit on, it is listed in the NCCN, is technically FDA approved. The boards are always a few years behind. So technically, maybe a correct answer. But based on the KEYNOTE 564 trial for those high-risk patients, a year of Pembro in the adjuvant setting seems to be kind of the winner if we're going to do anything adjuvantly.
Mm-hmm. And then I think it's really important to remember who are those high risk that qualify for pembrolizumab. So tumors over 7 centimeters, those T2 with grade 4 or sarcomatoid features, or if you have lymph node positive disease, or if you have oligometastatic disease that's completely resected, those are all indications to consider 1 year of adjuvant pembrolizumab.
Yeah, just to jump in, the resected metastatic disease, I hope they wouldn't ask that on the boards. I mean, it was only 6% of the KEYNOTE trial. Patients had to have resection within a year, which we generally wouldn't do. We would resect patients who are years out from nephrectomy, not months out. Right. So I think that's a whole can of worms. We don't have to go down that rabbit hole, but I would hope they wouldn't ask you about it because I don't think there's clear consensus.
Yeah, definitely. And I think another thing that I encounter frequently in my clinic, but for non-clear cell RCC, do you ever consider adjuvant therapy?
Oh my goodness. What'd you say, Tom?
Oh my goodness, no.
I would say the short answer is no. The one exception, and I've been asked this by community docs, is, you know, I have a resected chromophobe that was like 90% sarcomatoid or something. But these are exceedingly rare. Sarcomatoid kidney cancer is extremely immune responsive from data in the metastatic setting. So that's about the only situation I could see where you would consider it. I haven't come across it, but I've been you know, texted about it. But again, there's just no way they can ask you that on the boards because nobody really knows. The answer would be no, because they were not included in the KEYNOTE trial. You know, but that's a nuance.
Great. And so this is going to conclude our first episode of our two-part RCC series here with Tom and Brian. Thank you guys again so much for joining us. And we will see you guys next week when we talk about metastatic RCC.